Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. On this week's episode, we'll be talking about arcades, old arcades and new arcades. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about the Kong Off 3 that's coming up. But before we do that, let me go around and introduce the guys. My name's Sean, and with me is the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. What's up, Dor?
Hey, Sean. Same old, same old. Definitely going to talk about a subject I'm very passionate about today.
Good. I'm glad that's good that you're here then.
Oh, yeah.
Also with us, as usual, Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on, man? This is going to be a fun show. It kind of made me wish I hadn't sold all my old arcade games off. I was going through and looking at the pictures of all my old games and stuff. And I don't know. It's a mixed bag. They're fun to own. They also take up an awful lot of space.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, if people don't know about it, I think you should definitely talk about it here in a little bit, your collection that you had at one point in time.
Sure.
And we also have a return guest. For this episode, I thought this guy would fit perfect. He's going to know a lot about arcades, old games, and new arcades. So with us again is Vic Sage. What's going on, Vic?
Mm-hmm. Hey, not much, guys. Glad to be here. So I had so much fun on the D&D podcast that I had to jump when you guys offered.
Well, like I said, when Rob and I were talking about doing an arcade episode, and we're trying to figure out, like, are we just going to do games or talk about old arcades, new arcades? You came to my mind first. I was like, we got to get Vic, because if people don't know, Vic, you work in a retrocade.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the Arcadia Retrocade. So, and it's opened up here in Northwest Arkansas. So the owner, the manager, the grand poobah is Shea Mathis, and he's the one that had the vision to open up an arcade after 15 years, and it was sorely missed. And we actually just celebrated our first year anniversary on Sunday, November 10th.
That's great.
So it's a blast. It's a blast, and people love it. And, you know, knock on wood, thankfully, the community is embracing it. So, which is nice, because, you know, you get everything from 7 to 8 year olds to, you know, 60 year old people coming in, right. You know, reliving their younger days, and some experiencing it for the first time.
That's great. And you guys also have like console games set up, right? An Atari, I think I've seen in some pictures.
Yeah, that's right. We've got Atari 2600. We've also got a Super Nintendo, N64. We kind of push the Nintendo stuff to the back. But yeah, absolutely. And it should, hopefully here in a couple months, we'll get the Genesis set up and all that kind of stuff. And they're cool. They're just as popular, by the way, guys, as the arcade machines.
I'm so jealous.
Well, also, Vic, and you're kind of like the right-hand guy over at the Retroist as well, the website, and you have a segment on the podcast itself. But you just this week, and it was, I guess, just a matter of lucky timing, you had just put out your fifth installment of your well, why don't you talk about what you've been writing about the Arcadia?
Oh, sure. Well, I've been doing posts on the Retroist site. It's a diary of an arcade employee, my time at the Arcadia Retrocade. And I just got the fifth and sixth entries posted up. I guess Sunday was when the sixth one came up in time for the anniversary. And it's done very well. People seem to really enjoy seeing kind of behind the scenes of, you know, the whole.
You know, it's amazing. I've been out to the Retrocade, I think, 3 times now. And, you know, when you go to a place like that, for me, I'm terrible at, like, people can walk into an empty space and they have this vision like, oh, well I'm going to paint this here and this is going to go here. We'll put this riser here. I don't have that. When I go in, I'm like, oh, it's a warehouse, you know, and you'll put some games in here. So it's amazing seeing Vix. He has this whole series that he's been doing, like you said, on the Retroist that show, you know, from when it was nothing. I mean, it was an abandoned spot in a strip mall, and then they put some games in there. And then if you go through each of these posts, you know, they're at one point they're putting up drywall, and then at one point they're doing painting, and they're putting up artwork and moving machines around. And it's really fascinating to go through and see, you know, how they set this thing up from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, you know, drywall is the bane of existence of everything.
That looked terrible. It was on everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, it gets, I mean, everything, I mean, the machines, everything. And it was just one of those things that obviously never, you know, creating, you know, an arcade before, you know, it's like when everything was being done, it was just, there was one point when I actually turned to Shay and I was like, should we just get some like tarps and cover all the machines and things like that? He's like, no, we'll be done pretty quick. And that became a couple of weeks. And by the end, it's just, I mean, you would go through and you would have to just take washcloths and clean the machines out. It was that caked in there. It was horrible. Not to mention in our lungs. So.
Yeah, that stuff definitely burns when you're sanding and all that stuff.
I never want to see it again.
I'm with you on that, man. Well, yeah, everyone should go check that out. Really good stuff that you got over there, Vic.
Thank you. Really good. Thank you.
Another reason for this episode, again, we've been kind of throwing it around, the idea of doing this episode. And well, Rob, you're taking a road trip just in a couple of days, and it was kind of the reason why we kind of pushed this episode to this week. So why don't you go ahead and kind of tell everybody where you're going and what it's all about.
Well, I'm headed to Denver, Colorado this weekend for the Kong Off 3. Now, I guess the Kong Off 1 took place somewhere else. I think it was in Florida, but the second one was in Denver, and this year it's also in Denver. It's being held at the 1UP Arcade, which is in Denver, Colorado, and the 1UP is owned. There's two or three guys that went in and purchased. There's a 1UP and a 2UP in Denver. I haven't been to either one yet, but Kong Off 3 is basically all of the country's best Donkey Kong players. So there were certain people that are, I guess, returning champions, and all the guys that you may know if you've seen some of the documentaries or if you follow arcades, those guys are all going to be there. And then there was actually kind of like how they do with these national, like Texas Hold'em tournaments. Like if you won Donkey Kong tournaments in certain parts of the country, you could win a slot. And then there's going to be some slots that are actually open at this tournament that so you might be able to qualify if you go there. By the way, I'm I can't even get a high score. Like if you plug in a machine the first time, I'm so terrible at Donkey Kong. I could play for like 5 minutes or something. I'm not very good. So I'm not going to compete, but, and I don't know. I know that the tournament, it says Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's free to get in, standing room only. I don't know how much of it I'll be watching. I mean, I want to go to this, and I want to see what's going on. I don't know that I could watch somebody play Donkey Kong for 12 hours a day for 3 days in a row. So it may be a come-and-go type event for me. But I'm really excited about going and just seeing and seeing all these guys get together in one place.
Yeah, and are they doing something for the Space Invaders movie too?
The documentary. Yeah, there is a documentary. It's called The Spaced Invaders, and it's basically, I don't know. The first half of the documentary is more just about classic games, and then the second half is about people that collect those games today. A lot of other parts of the country, we don't really have basements here. We talked about that on the last episode, but a lot of people have basement arcades in other parts of the country. And so they interviewed several people that have put together these basement arcades. And, you know, we're not talking people with, you know, two games or five games. I know there's a couple people that have 60, 70, 80. There's one guy that has 100 and something games in his personal collection in his house. So these are really insane collections, and they are having a showing Thursday night. So that's my goal, is to get there early enough to attend this showing.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool documentary.
Yeah. And I've seen it already. I watched it on the Amazon streaming, and I know that if you buy it on DVD, when you buy the physical copy, it's like a 3-disc thing. I looked online. There's a whole bunch of extra features and stuff like that. So I've only seen the online version, but I do want to, hopefully they're going to have copies available there. So I don't have to pay shipping, which is pretty cheap really. But, if they have it there, I'm going to pick up a copy just because it says that it has like 140 minutes, like 2.5 more hours of, interviews and stuff and, you know, more footage of the collections and stuff. So I think that's pretty cool. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I watched it on Amazon as well. It was a really good documentary. I'd recommend it to anybody.
It's pretty hard to see some of those scenes, though, where some people are burning arcade machines. And
you know, I have I know a few guys here that still have games on different routes, and I've seen people say, you know, hey, come get this game for free, come do this. And one of the local collectors, I mean, he has his little arcade shop, and right outside he has a giant dumpster, and I've seen him put machines out there when, you know, nobody wants to come pick it up and he doesn't have a use for it. And it breaks your heart, you know. I mean, I, in a way, my collection, I almost felt like an orphanage, you know. I inherited several machines that were broken and I didn't have the knowledge at that time to fix, but I just couldn't stand to see them destroyed, you know. So I took them in, and maybe foolishly in some cases, but I don't know. I hate to see it too. I hate to see it, especially things that have been around for 20 or 30 years, you know, and then just, you know, because they're not earning enough money today in a laundromat or something, then off they go.
Keeping the dream alive.
Well, since we're on the subject, and just, I mean, we kind of cover it quickly. I mean, you had, what did you have, like 30 games or something like that? I mean, you have to go through all your games, but you had quite a collection.
Yeah, I had 30 at one time. I think I have a list of all the ones that I've bought and sold over the years, and I've bought and sold around 100. Sure. A lot of those were from auctions, and people are, you know, would be amazed. They would walk in and see, you know, these 30 arcade games. And I didn't always tell them that a lot of them I got at auctions for, you know, maybe $100, or sometimes I would do like a lot purchase, like buy five games for $500 or whatever. And then I might get rid of a couple that weren't ones that I wanted to keep. But we had a building that was like a woodshed that somebody had built, the people that lived in the house before us. And my wife, for my 30th birthday, decorated it like an arcade. She put down black and white tile carpet and painted the walls and did all these things. And I had two arcade machines at the time when she did that. I had two that were in the garage. And she had some friends from work come over, what I didn't know, and moved them out there. And so she said, well, you finally got your own arcade, which I took as permission to fill it. And so that's what I did. What was kind of funny is she put all these little, I call them like a woman's touch in there. Like, she put this little bar area with a microwave and a little thing so you can make snacks. That was out like a week later. Like, that went out in the trash, and I put a couple machines there. And she had a little table with a seating area that came out. I put some machines there. And actually, the only reason why I stopped at 30 machines is because that's as many as I could put in there and still sort of walk around in there.
Well, it's quite a collection you had.
Right? Yeah,
and I'm sure you kind of look back and wish you had them. But I know you and I talked, and you said, you know what? It's sometimes a lot more of a headache than what it is worth.
Oh, it's the only thing that I've ever collected. It's unique in so many ways. But one way is there were so many machines that they were so temperamental. You know, like I had a Q-Bert machine. And I would go out there and play it and then go back in the house and go out there, you know, a week later and turn it on, and something would be broken. Either a power supply would go out, or it had blown a fuse or done something or whatever, you know. So, it's the only thing that only collection like that I ever had where stuff would just break even when I wasn't using it, you know. So that was difficult. And it's also the only collection I ever had where everything that I bought was worth less than what I put into it. I mean, there were several games where I would pay $100 and it might need a new monitor. I'd pay $100 for a new monitor, and it might need new side art and maybe new paint and all this. And so I would put $500 into a machine that I could turn around and sell for $250. You know, I mean, it made money wise, it made absolutely no sense. So as long as you were keeping the machines and you enjoyed them, then it was worth it. But if you were trying to do it and make a living, I know there are people that do it, but I don't know how.
Yeah, well, maybe someday you'll get back into it when you retire, have yourself another arcade.
We'll see.
Probably not, but you never know. But you know, speaking of that documentary, there's a bunch of documentaries out. You know, you got King of Kong, Chasing Ghosts. There was a Missile Command one that I watched, which was really good. But and like with the Kong Off 3, I think this all stems basically from, you know, like Twin Galaxies and Walter Day, who had started, you know, originally keeping scores, you know, across the country and stuff like that. Vic, did you have some stuff back on the Twin Galaxies and Walter?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of interesting. Walter Day actually had a couple career paths in his youth. But in 1981, he became the landlord of the Twin Galaxies arcade and purchased it, of course. And then he read an article in a 1982 issue of Time magazine because it had video games featured on the front of the cover. And I think I actually had that same Time magazine. I think it had a picture of like a guy running away from like Pac-Man in a spaceship. And I think it said like, Zam Biff Pow on it, you know, almost like a comic book.
Right.
But he read that and it got him the idea and it inspired him to create an international scoreboard database. He saw that no one else was doing it. And then it's been reported that 6 months after the word started circulating in the community that Walter had taken upon himself to be the record keeper for high scores, that he was getting between 50 to 75 phone calls a day from around the world. So from players wanting their high scores recorded. And then in 1997, it's said that Walter Day co-authored a 1,000-page book of video game high scores, which then led him and the team of it, Twin Galaxies, to produce an annual 1,000-page book of records and rules. And then by 2008, that included an additional 1,500 pages. So it's Walter Day made himself the icon, the referee of the video gaming world. And that collection, those books are considered to be the official record books for the worldwide electronic gaming industry.
You know, it's amazing. You know, there was no internet. You know, it wasn't like now. I mean, you go on the internet now, you can find information on anything. The way the word traveled to people playing these games.
And how did they verify the scores back then, dude? I mean, I remember that. Well, we talked about this a little bit on the Atari episode, when, you would try to get like your Activision patch, you would take a Polaroid of your TV screen and mail in that Polaroid. Is that how they verified them, or did they just take your word, or how did they do that back then?
I think at the beginning, they just took people's words, hey, I got, what was King of Kong? What was the fake high score?
Oh yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember his name. He was the Joust guy, I think, too. And yeah. He admitted that because basically Billy Mitchell,
called him down.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, there was even on the Retroist. There was I have an old Joystick magazine, which was one of my favorite gaming magazines back in the day, and all their scores say it was submitted by Twin Galaxies, and it includes that fake score on Donkey Kong. Ooh. So,
well, then I take back what I said earlier, and I am awesome at Donkey Kong. My high score is 80 billion.
Yeah, I don't think they go by your word anymore.
Don't do that. Oh, rats.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's some crazy stuff. Like you have to have it videotaped the entire time now. Yeah. So I mean, it can't be paused or anything, right? So.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, I watched the Missile Command documentary, which I'll put it in the show notes. I don't know what the actual name was. I can't remember it right now off the top of my head. But, this guy was trying to beat the high score, and he was planning on playing for a couple days straight, just playing. And the problem was is the machine kept rebooting, or the board would just shut down. It's like this guy's putting all this time. He had a girlfriend, so he'd have to like put his life on, I wouldn't say hold, but he would pick long weekends, holiday weekends to try this out. And he would just get so far and then boom. And I'll tell you what, man, it had to be because he was so tired, but he handled it way better than I would have handled. I mean, I've died playing Pitfall like in the first minute and overreacted. I can't imagine sitting there for hours playing it. So these guys, I mean, these scores that these guys get, they're no joke.
I remember a couple of years ago, a guy went for the world's record of Asteroids. And I remember that specifically that the time, it was 56 hours of gameplay of Asteroids. And one of the ways that in Asteroids, the way that you do it is because you earn so many extra men that after a while, you could just let the game go and, you'll be alive for 10 or 15 seconds and an asteroid will hit you And, you know, so basically he would use all those extra men as a buffer to then stop and go to the bathroom and go do something. And, of course, he's just dying and dying. And then he has to eventually come back and start playing and building extra men. But 56 hours, I could make a real short list of things I'd like to do for 56 hours.
Well, there's the first video game competition I remember reading, yet again, Joystick Magazine, was actually for Tron. And I remember even back in that magazine, they talked about, you know, it was just basically go as long as you can, get as high score, the highest score you can get. And then there was one reporter that needed to plug in his camera and blink, unplugged one of the player's machines.
Oh, no.
About to kill him. So,
derezzed. Yeah.
So in the in the article, it said that basically, you know, I mean, everyone agreed, go ahead and let him start over. And some people were like, well, okay, he got an unfair advantage because he got a second shot at it. And it's like, well, you know, that's one way of looking at it, I guess. I don't know if I agree with that.
Wow. To be in a Tron tournament, I would need an extra 10 minutes of my life. I wouldn't have to block out a weekend or anything. I'm good for about, I don't know, I think I can get to about level 3. That's about it for me. It amazes me, you know, even on, I listen to No Quarter, and, you know, Mike and Carrington, they play one game each week, and then the next week they give whatever their high score is. And I play along, and sometimes I'm, you know, I might be a little better. I might not be quite as good, but it's in the ballpark. And then they always read the high score. I remember on Dig Dug, you know, they were like in the 30,000 range, 40,000. I'm pretty good at Dig Dug. I think I am, you know. And I get like in the 80,000, 90,000 somewhere, you know, it's a pretty decent score. And I forgot what the world's record is, but it's literally in the millions, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm out. I mean, I'm not even in the ballpark, nowhere close.
Well, and that's another thing on Twin Galaxies. It's not just high score. I mean, it could be, as you've all said, longest running time on it, you know. So it's like, oh, Dig Dug, 87 hours straight. You know, well, it's like,
can I ask you guys, do you know what your longest one quarter game was?
Go ahead, Vic.
Probably Crazy Climber. I mean, way back when I first started playing arcade games.
I'm not going to give any false. I mean, I'm horrible at games. Arcade games, Wii games, computer games, Android phone games, but I have fun playing them, but I am not good at all. I'm not good at all. How about you, Dor?
Well, I can give an example. The time I realized that I was actually decent at video games or arcade games was me and my brother both got $40, some kind of grandmother, whatever. We went down to Crabtown, USA, which we had to cut through the woods and get to, blah, 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 play a game. I went in and I got my first dollar and quarters, and I put it in Super Mario Brothers. My brother spent $40 in quarters and buying sodas in the time it took me to do one quarter. And I remember I looked up, we got there at around 4 o'clock, and it was around 5:30 when he came to me asking me for money. I'm sitting there on the same quarter. I'm like, what's wrong with you? You really do suck, don't you? So it was about an hour and a half, I would say. And that was when I first learned, that was like around the first time I ever beat Super Mario Brothers in the arcade on one quarter.
That is awesome.
You know, one of the worst things about owning 30 arcade games is people assume that you're great at all of them.
Well, yeah.
And so people that would come over, it wasn't always, but like I had a Centipede cabinet. And so at one point, it was actually a friend of my wife's came over and said, I love Centipede. Let's play. And she killed me. And she was like, I thought you're good at this. I didn't say I was good at it. I just said I owned it, you know? And then someone came over one time and said, oh, Q-Bert. I said, oh, yeah, beat me at Q-Bert. So people were constantly coming over and beating me at the games that I owned, which was very embarrassing. So I love playing games. I love playing all kinds of console games, video games. I'm pretty much across the board with a few exceptions. I'm pretty horrible at them, other than my 80 billion Donkey Kong score that I haven't had to prove yet. But other than that.
Which you'll be defending this weekend at the Kong Off 3.
Yeah. Right.
Next to Billy Mitchell.
I'll be right there.
Here's one thing that's pretty interesting, I think, and I know it'll definitely be in a future diary post, is that people ask us, what's your favorite game here? You know, the Arcadia Retrocade, you know, and we have our favorites, but I think I've seen Shay, I mean, it's been open a year, and I, you know, I'm not just, you know, exaggerating. I think I've seen him play 3 games.
Really?
I mean, it's busy, all the time busy, you know. Right. You know, it's, you know, customer service is the name of the game, and, you know, we kind of keep patrolling the floor, making sure everybody's, you know, understands the free credit buttons and all that kind of stuff.
I need to move closer to you.
You don't even have to pay. I promise you. Just come visit. You will get him for free. I promise.
Well, I'll first have to make a deal for someone to kill my wife.
Well, I don't want to put words into Shay's mouth, but I would have to assume that he's got to get some sort of gratification of just seeing the people come in and helping them and watching them enjoy these games that obviously he grew up, you know, loving these games.
I would be terrible at it. People would come up to me, ask me for stuff if I'm the owner. I'm trying to play a game here. What's wrong with you?
There was only one time since, you know, that I've been involved with it, helping Shay out, and was a Tron. So I was playing Tron. And I had a really good game, guys. And I was the only one there at that point. And one of the other regulars, you know, said, "Hey, there's a guy at the door." And I'm like, "I am terribly sorry." I said, "Could you please take the admission?" You know. And he goes, "Yeah, yeah." And basically, that person went and got the people that came in and brought them back to me. And they're like, "What's your high score?" And I was like, "I'm at 118,000. I'm sorry."
And, you know, one of my favorite areas of the Retrocade, you know, they have all these arcade games and, you know, I've seen a lot of arcade games. They're fun. You go back and you play them and stuff. But some of them, you know, you've seen a lot. And then there are the consoles, you know, they're like people go, "Oh, they have an Atari." I go, "Yeah, I got an Atari." I mean, it's fun to go do. And then in the back area, they have this little area that has like collectible, like old board games and things from the 80s.
Cool.
And I remember last time, you know, my wife was like, "You know, you're not playing games," and I'm standing back there like looking at all these little things. I'm like, you know, I've played Centipede, but I'm, you know, and then there is a little tiny area off to the corner. I think it was probably like a manager's office or something. I'm not sure, but it's like a little side room. You go up these steps and it's not for, you know, public access. You could see in there, but when you look in there, it's almost, Vic, you could probably explain it. It's almost like a bedroom or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we have stuff that, like you said, not the general public actually gets to interact with, like the, you know, the Vectrix, or there's a microfiche reader that has like 50 years worth of comic books on it. Then there's the C64 and the Apple computer.
Yeah.
That kind of the stuff that we're like, well, we really want people to see this, but we're not quite sure if we can.
It's
trust
almost
it
like,
to get
yeah,
broken.
when you go to a museum and then there's like a glass wall where you can see into a room or whatever, you know, and you go there and I'm like, it's literally like looking into my bedroom from 1982. A few more Star Wars toys in there and it would be just a dead ring. That's exactly what it looked like.
Well, Dork kind of gave us one of his earlier memories of going to the arcades. But Vic, how about you? When you know, what are some of your memories of you know, being a kid when you first went to arcades?
Yeah, well, the first arcade we had in my neck of the woods in Northwest Arkansas, there was a couple games at like the bowling alley, things like that. In fact, that's where I first played Space Invaders. Was a game. It was an arcade called Games People Play, and it was fantastic. I mean, I can still remember it, and that's where I first played some of the really great ones for me, like Crazy Climber and Zookeeper and things like that. But and I thought, like I said, I thought it was local. I thought it was only, I mean, it was just like a little independent. But there was a photo I posted on the Retroist a couple months back, and it was basically a destroyed Star Wars machine that had been burned. I mean, someone literally had set it on fire, and there was a sign outside the window that said Games People Play. So, and I tried desperately to look online and see if I could find anything about if it was a, you know, a chain, but I still think it's an independent. So, but it was fantastic. You know, you'd walk in and, you know, and that's also where Donkey Kong was, Pac-Man, you know, the regulars. That is also the place that my father, almost got kicked out because of the game Star Castle. Do you guys remember that one?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
So, well, he hates video games. And one of the reasons is probably due to this, due to Star Castle. And he was playing it, doing really well. And then it kind of cheap shot at him and destroyed his ship. Now, the arcade machines were in a circle. And my father got so mad that he actually pushed the machine. And the machine went backwards.
Oh.
And thankfully, due to the circle, the other machine stopped it from tilting all the way back. But it, but it came back and made a little bang sound. And, yeah, I was over there playing Zookeeper, kind of like going, oh, what's going on with my father? You know? So, and you could just see the people and the t-shirts, the games people play t-shirts, kind of going, okay, time to call the cops. And we shortly left after that and went to eat at McDonald's.
So. Oh, man. That's great. You guys go to the arcade a lot, or when you were a kid?
Yeah, it was pretty much a Saturday thing. And like I said, I mean, my dad really didn't enjoy it. And, you know, I mean, I was hooked at the beginning, guys. I really was. It's like from the first quarter. So I think Space Duel was one of the first ones I played. So,
you know, we didn't – around here, we didn't have – that I know of, like a standalone arcade. We had, I believe it was the Aladdin's Castle that was in our mall. But there was, you know, there was games everywhere. You know, there were certain games I remember playing at like a pizza shop. We used to go to this place. It was called USA Roller Rink. It was the big thing. Every Saturday we would go there. It was a huge roller rink, and they had a section. Basically, they had their own little mini arcade. So, and a lot of it was just my memories were, I mean, I would play like Moon Patrol, stuff like that. And like I said, I was horrible at it. But I've talked before about this, like my fondest memories were watching my brother play, you know, my older brother, he's 3 years older, and he was, you know, I remember watching him play Joust and some other games. So, I mean, most of my memories are of watching him, you know, just standing there eating my candy bar. And because I knew I was bad even then. So I was like, all right, I'll play a little Moon Patrol or whatever. And then I'm going to go get a Three Musketeers bar and watch Scott play a little arcade games there. But how about you, Rob? I know you had some arcades, man, around you when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, we had well, there were two that were almost opposites that were near me. One was Cactus Jack's, which is still around today. It's changed quite a bit, obviously, in the past, you know, 20-30 years. And then there was Bally Le Mans, which was our big arcade that was in the mall. Now, Cactus Jack's, and I've probably talked about both these. Cactus Jack's was like the dark, scary arcade. This was the arcade that, you know, if I were a parent, I would not have dropped my kids off. My parents didn't care. They were like, hey, you know, here's a roll of quarters, have fun, you know. It's the arcade that they used. It had like the exposed pipes on the ceiling, and they had sprayed in all the insulation, and we just assumed it was asbestos or something. It probably was. And then they painted over that, so it almost looked like a cave in there. The only light really came from the games, and then they had these windows on the outside, and then they came and tinted the windows. They were like, nope, there's too much light. You might have a chance of seeing where you're stepping. So that was Cactus Jack's. And I think I told this before. Cactus Jack's in the back had a cigarette machine that took tokens.
Nice.
it's the only place I've ever heard of that, you know. And it was also next to, there's a convenience store named Dong Fong's that would sell beer to anybody over about 12 years old. And there's a giant, like a big kind of forest thing out back. So, I mean, that was like, you know, if you were going to get mugged for some tokens, it was probably going to happen at Cactus Jack's. Bally Le Mans was the complete opposite. It was the one that was in the mall. You know, it was a name brand. It almost looked like a movie theater, and with the lights that came in, the flashing light bulbs, and, you know, they would have the thing like brand new games. You know, this is the first place when Dragon's Lair came out, they had Dragon's Lair. When Gauntlet came out, you know, so they would always have a section up front of like brand new games. So, and it was the mall that was pretty close to us. So if my parents would go to the mall, or my mom and my grandma would go to the mall, they would take us. We're like, hey, we're going to Le Mans, you know, and we would go there. Even if you didn't have any tokens, it was fun, you know, to walk around and see the games and search under all the games and see if you could find a token, or press the eject button on every machine to see if you could find a token, you know. And then there was another arcade in my little town called Fun Spot. And the cool thing about Fun Spot is my friend's parents' friend, so friends of my friend, basically owned this arcade. And before they opened, they basically knew nothing about an arcade. So they had bought these machines and set them up, and they didn't know anything about it. So they called my buddy Jeff, and he called me, and they said they want us to come in and be like, you know, basically play test their arcade. So we went in, and they, you know, like we're playing Double Dragon, and they're standing behind us. How do you like this game? Is this one good? Or all the buttons work? All that, you know, like they're right, like surveying us. And then they're like, okay, next game. And then we would move to the next one. And so, we would go in there every now and then, and they would actually let us play for free because we would tell them if a joystick wasn't working or something like that. But we felt like, you know, we were on the inside then. That was a cool place. But it's amazing that I lived in a town of less than 30,000 people. And at one time, now one, we had an arcade, like, part of an arcade that was in a bowling alley. There was part of an arcade that was in the roller skating rink. There were two standalone arcades. It was like they were everywhere in the 80s. And this wasn't a big town, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, you know, you had them in the roller skate, the bowling alley. That was a big place. You know, my parents, before they got divorced, they would play like, you know, they did couples bowling league. So every Sunday afternoon, we would go to the local, you know, bowling alley. They'd bring me and my brother, and it would be like, here you go, a couple bucks or whatever. And they had a real small, compact, you know, arcade little room. I think they maybe had like maybe six games in there. Mm-hmm. You know, and we would go there. That was one that I know Joust was at there. You know, but like we said, they're everywhere. Pizza shops. You know, I remember seeing Galaga at a pizza shop and stuff like that.
We had a grocery store that was our little local grocery store, and they had two machines, Zookeeper and Moon Patrol. I still remember the machines right next to the exit. And I thought, I mean, now looking back, I think, what a great idea. Let's put something where kids will congregate right next to the exit of the store. All it would take is one guy leaving to just snatch a kid, you know, and all the rest of us, we were playing games we wouldn't have even noticed, you know. But, you know, you're right, man. You know, the there was a convenience store by my house that had three or four machines, and every now and then they would rotate one out, but, you know, and then you'd say goodbye to whatever one left, and there would be a new one, you know. But literally, you know, convenience stores, laundromats, anywhere you could think of, there would be a few games there.
Yeah, and that's kind of the funny one. Looking back, this convenience store, because the convenience store by us, and it had a gauntlet machine, and there'd be, you know, three, four kids around playing gauntlet for hours in a convenience store. It just seems, you know, pizza shop. Okay, I can see you get there a little early. Your kids, you know how it is, and you go pick up a pizza. You don't really usually have a lot of room in the waiting area, and so, you know, you give your kid a quarter and play some Galaga or whatever. But why don't we go around and we can each kind of name off like three of our you know, favorite games that we remember as a you know, growing up as a kid. Maybe not so much. Maybe they still are now. But why don't we do that, Rob? Like, what are your, if you got to give me three games that were your tops?
Three games. Number one is 720. 720 is my favorite game of all time. It's a skateboarding game. It was when I first started collecting arcade games, I made a list of the top 10 games I wanted to own. This would have been in the early 90s. And that was the number one game on my list. It took me about 15 years to find one. They're a little high maintenance. They're a little wonky. And there weren't that many of them to begin with. But I did finally buy one. When I sold off all my games, I have about four games left that are in my garage, and that's one of them. I will never, ever, ever sell that game.
And it had the weird controller.
It does. It's a completely unique controller. It's like it's a spinner shaped like a joystick. It's very unique. I had somebody sell me a replacement one for mine, and he gave me a really good deal. And I looked on eBay. Just the joystick assembly is about $150, just for 720. Yeah, I paid before I found this one. I found this one locally. I had found one in Denver, which would have been a 10-hour drive each way. And I was going to buy it, and then this one came up. So, but 720, it hit me right at that time. You know, we had our skateboarding. We talked about that. It was right in the middle of that entire era. So it was just all these things combining at once. But that's number one for sure. Matt Mania is another one of my favorites.
Yeah, buddy.
And that's one that I had to call out the No Quarter guys. They did Matt Mania. And I think Carrington, Carrington's high score, I think he said, was like 6,000 points. So I turned it on. I played, I mean, the first game of the day. I haven't played it in a few years. My first game was like 250,000 points. Matt Mania is definitely a game that I could play essentially until I get tired of playing. I mean, exactly. Because there's only so many opponents, and it's, and once you learn how to beat them, you can just keep playing forever. And Matt Mania is one that was in the convenience store by my house. So, you know, I felt bad because that the convenience store also had track and field, which if you've played, I mean, it was a 4-player track and field, and three people would lose. So three people had to put in another quarter, and then, you know, the winner would stay. And so that was like a money-making deal for them all day. I would go there and put one quarter in Matt Mania and just sit there and play all day until they threw me out, you know. And then the third one is Karate Champ. Now, Karate Champ is, I think, the first 2-player martial arts-type fighting game. It was the first one I remember. And, you know, you had, it was another unique. You had the two joysticks where you had to do all the moves and things. And you always wanted to be player one. Because if you're player two, all the moves are reversed, and so you have to reverse them, yeah, in your head. But I was pretty good at Karate Champ too. So, but yeah, those are probably my top three.
And dude, Karate Champ had the bonus levels that were just hard enough to be hard.
Oh yeah. Break.
What
the
were you
boards.
Supposed to? Were you supposed to do with that bull? I've never figured out.
You got to punch him right in the face. Reverse punch. Yeah, knock him out. Yeah.
I remember playing Karate Champ, I believe, on the Commodore 64. Uh-huh. It was ported out.
You needed the dual sticks. You needed the dual sticks. The dual sticks is where it was at. That's what made that game great, because like Rob said, now if you were good, you would purposefully go to the other side, because no one would think you would go to the other side because everything was backwards. But if you were good, you could go to the other side and do exactly what you wanted to do right away.
Now, I may have told you this story before, but I had a buddy that lived about 45 minutes away, and there was an arcade in between us. It was Malibu Grand Prix, which was a national-type arcade. It had go-kart racing and stuff, and they had an arcade. And they had Karate Champ, and my friend and I both love Karate Champ. So his parents would bring him. My parents would bring me. It was a 20-minute drive, you know, because we would meet in the middle. And we would play Karate Champ. And there was only one Malibu Grand Prix in Oklahoma. It was this one. So when I started collecting arcade games, I was looking on eBay, and there was a guy that had, I think it was RoboCop for sale. But in the back of the picture, there were more machines. And so I emailed him. I'm like, hey, what other machines do you have? And it turned out one of those lot deals where I bought a bunch of games. And so I get over there, and one of his games is Karate Champ. And I'm like, oh man, I haven't played this in forever, you know? So I get that machine. I got a bunch of machines. If you collect arcade games, you shouldn't own a trailer. It's just bad news. Or a credit card. It's bad, bad combination. So I bought this Karate Champ, and I called my buddy. I'm like, hey, the tournament's not over. Cobra Kai lives. You're going to have to come over. We're going to have to play some more Karate Champ. And so I wanted to clean it up and everything before he came. And so I opened it up. I'm cleaning it out. And in the bottom of this machine, I found Malibu Grand Prix tokens. So this is the machine that he and I used to play against each other in the 80s. It's the same machine.
That's awesome.
And so that's another one that I will not be getting rid of. It's out there. You know, it has graffiti on it. It has people who are carved. It's not in terribly good condition, but it is the machine that he and I played on in the 80s. So
yeah, it's not about what it looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's the memories inside of that one. Vic, what about you? What are some of you got three games for us that you loved as growing up?
Yeah, Crazy Climber. So, which a machine that has the most psychotic control scheme.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's very sensitive. I mean, you know, if you've never played the game, you play a guy trying to climb the outside of a building to reach to the top to a helicopter, and you have to avoid crazy people dropping flower pots on you, trying to knock you off, bird poop.
Yep.
Coming down on you, King Kong trying to punch you off the building, but yeah, it's very sensitive. I mean, you can, once you get into the groove of it, it's not just, you know, up down or anything like that. So I mean, you can kind of reach around and, you know, pick your spot where you want to climb up. It's incredible.
Yeah. You know, that game, I'm sorry, but I was telling Rob about this prior to this recording that. A lot of the games that you guys had on the sheet that you gave me, I didn't know by the name. You know, like this one, I was like, Crazy Climber, what is, what kind of game is this, Vic? And then I would go and search it out, watch a little on YouTube. I'm like, okay, I totally remember the game now. I think my brother and I would either shorten some of the names. You know, we probably called it Climber. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So looking back at it, the names don't always ring a bell, but as soon as I see them, I believe this was it a, like a cocktail? They call it a cocktail table.
So
is that what it is,
there were definitely cocktail games. In fact, that's where Crazy Kong came from. It's because Crazy Kong cocktail games are actually just refurbished Crazy Climber, which is why it's kind of like a hack almost. It's why the colors are a little off. It doesn't look exactly like Donkey Kong.
Hmm. All right.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, did this have dual stick control? Because I do remember it had weird controls, but once you got the flow, you could. Yeah,
it's all about the flow on that game for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's you know, the left stick controls the left hand, you know, left hand, left arm, and the right stick controls the right hand, right arm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then once you get out of that flow,
you have to pull one up, pull one down almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I still think it's one of my favorites. There's Dragon Slayer, of course, mm-hmm. but I mean, everyone knows about Dragon Slayer, I think. So
I think everybody has a story about, I know I do, I'm sure you do, about the first time they saw Dragon's Lair. You know, because I told you about that Bally Le Mans, you know, the arcade that got things new, and they got the deluxe Dragon's Lair that had the second monitor on top. I'm sure you've seen those. So
absolutely.
I couldn't see the machine. All I saw was a sea of people. But then I was like, well, we're all watching a cartoon. And then you realize that was the game, you know.
Yeah, first time I ever saw it was Starcade, so the TBS game show. Yeah, and I remember absolutely walking into Showbiz Pizza, which became the arcade later on, and opened that door, and I was so excited, I actually ran back outside to my father, who was just getting out of the car. He was like, you know, Dragon's Lair, Dragon's Lair, you know. And there was probably about 20, 25 people standing in line. And just like you said, it was the duel, you know, with the monitor on top. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I've noticed a lot of people really kind of dump on Dragon's Lair. You know, they're like, well, it's just a memory game. It's like, well, maybe so, but you're still playing it, you know. It's still a video game. Yeah. And, of course, you know, the bonus is you get this beautiful Don Bluth animation.
Yeah.
I used to act like Dirk the Daring. Like, that's what I would do. You know, it's like we have a tree and, you know, like my father put little ropes so that I could swing off of them. That lasted for a little while until actually one of the ropes wrapped around my neck and I swung off the tree limb. And yeah, well, guess what? The rope was still attached.
That'll definitely stop it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were some neighborhood kids that literally went screaming to my father, you know, that I was being strangulated. And I was, I mean, I'm not kidding. I was trying to hold onto the tree limb to keep the weight off and I couldn't. I mean, I was literally being hung. So those ropes went off immediately. So, but, I would say maybe the, you know, another, and it's so hard to just, you know, a top four, a top three, much less a top 10. It's probably Zookeeper. I think that's a highly overlooked game. I mean, it is fantastic. You just basically play a zookeeper who's these animals. They're trying to break out of a brick cell, and you have to run around the square. And every time you run around, you lay another brick. So you're trying to keep them in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This was a great game, actually.
Oh, yeah. So, and every once in a while, you know, there's little things like, oh, it might be a root beer for points you can pick up, but there will be a net.
Right.
And you can pick up that net and you can put those animals back into the cell.
You know, for years, I thought that net was a machete. It's like a stick with a little blade on it. I thought, this game's kind of morbid. But, Zookeeper is definitely a game that gets hard in a hurry. You play that first level and you're like, well, this is pretty easy. And then the second one's not too bad. By the time you get fourth, fifth round, it starts picking up a little bit.
Well, absolutely. Because remember, they had the little, you know, it wasn't the same level over and over. It's like, you know, the next level, oh, you had to jump up these moving platforms and avoid a monkey throwing coconuts at you.
Coconuts,
But the escalator level, that is the one that hurts. Mm. So you're trying to jump over all these animals and you're on an escalator. So that's probably my top three.
Well, I knew it would be hard to narrow it down. Like you said, even top 10, top 20. But, you know, time restraints, we had to keep it down. So I thought it would be kind of fun to have, to, you know, you guys to have to narrow it down to three or four games. So, Dor, how about, or,
well,
yeah, Dor, you're up next.
Well, I'll say my games have a similarity in the sense of I could put a quarter in them and play them at least for an hour straight. And the first one I'll say is WWF Superstars. Back in the day, 1983, 84 time frame, I was all over professional wrestling. I would watch everything professional wrestling, period. This by far was the best wrestling video game in existence, maybe even since then. I'll say in the characters, the animation, the moves, and dare I say the logic behind the game. Your ultimate goal was to fight the Road Warriors, get the belts, and then defend the belts. And it would let you defend the belts indefinitely. And it had everybody's finishing move in it, everybody's setup moves in it. And I would literally spend hours just taking people's quarters religiously. And and I'll say it was the only wrestling game I could remember where it was four player, where it was dual tag teams, where you could have two people versus two people. So I definitely devoted a lot of time to that one.
It is a great, great game right behind Matt Mania.
Oh, well, both, I was a fan of all the old wrestling games. Now, Fighter Habusa and Matt Mania was kind of unbelievable. He was the superstar there. Great, great. But in like WWF Superstars, I could be the big boss man. I mean, you know.
Well, there was a wrestling game later, the one that it had like Yokozuma and Doink the Clown and stuff. You remember that one?
I want to say it was Superstars.
Is that what it is? I played that one quite a bit. I remember that one.
Yeah, there was more than a couple wrestling video games. They all tried to do something different, but this one was four player, which I loved a lot. After that, I'll say Double Dragon was my first forte into a game with a deliberate ending. Yep. that I completely controlled. I would literally one quarter beginning to end, and now I literally tried it again. I can't even get 10% through the game on one quarter.
It's a tough game.
In hindsight, yes, but I don't understand how I was so OCD back in the day that I was that good at it.
It's all about the elbow. You got to learn, you got to throw the reverse elbow.
Yeah, the reverse elbow and throwing the people away from you was always a smart idea.
I think Double Dragon may be the first actual arcade game that I ever beat in an arcade. And it's a very short list. The Double Dragon, Altered Beast, Golden Axe, and probably five or less games that I've ever actually beat, you know, but the Double Dragon was the first. And then at the end, if you played the two-player version, then at the very end, you had to fight the other player. You had to fight your buddy.
Yeah. And I'll say, lengthwise of this video game, it wasn't long.
No.
I mean, if you look back on it, it was one level was two parts, and there was like four different levels with two parts each, and then the final battle. So lengthwise, it wasn't long, but it was uncommonly difficult. And it would suck your quarters down if you weren't good.
Well, Dor, let me just interrupt you real quick before you give your other one. Okay, so you beat Mario Brothers, correct?
Yeah.
And Flack, you said you beat about five games. Vic, did you finish? Did you beat any arcade games? Because I'll tell you what, I didn't.
So no, I didn't. Dragon Slayer once, but that was because of a Laserdisc error.
It's still a win.
So, yeah, I literally put the quarter in, and it was obviously malfunctioning, and it just jumped right to the end with Dirk.
Breaking
globe, and I was just I'm done.
You beat
dude, you put the quarter in. That counts. You earned it.
He was it. That game knew he was Dirk the Daring, and knew it.
It's like, this is to make up for you almost hanging yourself.
Yeah, we don't want this guy putting any ropes around his neck. Let's just give him a win.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry, Dor.
You're good. And I'll say most of the games I played weren't like Space Invaders that went on forever. They were actually beatable games. And I'll say most of those games I actually did beat. You know, games like Joust you couldn't beat. You could play forever. I loved it, but there was no end, so I quickly lost interest in those games. But after that, I'll say, I think it's pronounced Yi R Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah.
99% of the time when I say this game to someone, they have no idea what I'm talking about. But when they see the picture of the game, then it's like, oh, that game.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was talking about when I said I was doing research. I had no idea. You've mentioned this, I think, on Android App Addicts. We've talked about it. Like, I know you've mentioned this game before, and I had absolutely no idea till I looked it up. And then, like I said, for my brother and I, it was just Kung Fu.
Right.
Totally knew this game.
If you'd like to see the Commodore 64 version, I did it on Sprite Castle.
Very cool.
I love this game.
Well, there's two reasons it holds a special place in my heart. One, I was able to go through the characters twice. Mm-hmm. I could get to the ending guy. I want to say his name was, I was going to say Star, but that's like two from the end. But I could beat every character twice. But it was at a place called Charlie's Donuts, owned by, I'm not kidding, I believe they were Vietnamese people. But it was in the corner of the place, and there was such a way when you went to the bathroom, you could easily reach over top the counter and steal a donut. So I would go there, play a game or two, walk to the bathroom, steal a donut, go to the bathroom, eat the donut, come back out, play a game or two, go back in, steal a donut, eat a donut, come back out, play a game or two. And that game, time-wise, I played a lot of hours on. But I have to just say this. No one said this game. To me, this was one of the most epic games of all times. It was Star Wars Cabinet, old school. I believe it was made by Atari. Mm-hmm. I remember the farmer's market, literally near dirt floors where my dad would take us. It was that filthy dirty. But they had a little arcade where literally 66% of the games weren't working. Button wasn't working, stick was working. But they had this cabinet sit-down Atari Star Wars game. I blew so much money on that game because there was no end to it, but it was Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I have a buddy of mine that has one of those right now in his garage. I just played it, maybe a month ago or whatever. And I have a picture of me in it, and I'm almost embarrassed to send it to you because it's amazing how much smaller those sit-down cabinets have got over the years. I thought these X-Wings are pretty small these days. I don't know.
Well, they have mini cabinets now, right?
I think that must have been it. This must have been the kid size one. But you know what's funny about all these memories, and I want to get to Sean's too, but it's funny how not only do we all remember these games, but we remember the places. Like I remember, you know, whenever you say Dragon's Lair, I remember where we saw it. I remember where I was when I beat Double Dragon or the first time I saw 720. It's not just the game. It was the location of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, mine, really, they're kind of quick. I mean, they're not boring games at all. They're just, I think, boring in my choice, but they stand out to me because of what you just said of remembering those places I would be at. I mean, there's Joust. I love Joust. I'm horrible at it. I just remember watching my brother just making those ostriches fly, just going nuts on the buttons. You know, watching him play that game at the bowling alley. Another one, Moon Patrol. Like I said, at the roller skating rink, I have real fond memories of going there. I didn't even really roller skate, you know. It was back when breakdancing was really in, and my brother was in a crew or whatever, and you know, I think I'd break with him a little bit or something. But you know, so we kind of hang out. It was just kind of hang out, you know what I mean? So they had the arcade area, and I remember playing Moon Patrol.
That's a great game.
Yeah, real fun game. I've been trying to get it to work on my emulator, which is on the Wii, and I'm not having that great of luck. I can get the 2600 version to work, but it's just, I mean, you guys know it's not the same. And it's nothing bad about the Atari 2600. It's just that my memories of Moon Patrol are in the arcade, pretty crisp graphics.
I used to suck at that game, though.
Yeah, so did I. You know, I did as well. And then really, Galaga. I mean, that's a game that I still play in emulation. I'm still just as bad, but it was at the pizza shop. You know, I remember going and we, a lot of times we'd stop and order there. So you had time to play a little bit and just, and it was really at just about any arcade you would go to, you know, the one at the mall, the one at the skate shop. It was everywhere. I mean, everybody knows Galaga is a great game. So, I mean, those are my three. I mean, like I said, not boring games, just kind of boring in my choices, but I wasn't, like I said, in the beginning, we had one major arcade, at the mall. So, I mean, they weren't that big, but we had a lot of fun going there. You know, I can still remember the sounds. You know, it was kind of dark, the neon lights and just weird, but I can kind of still remember the smell of the place. I don't know if it was like an electronic smell mixed with cigarette smoke because, you know, back then people smoked everywhere.
Right. There's a certain smell and it's like the electronics and when the wood heats up, it's almost like that, it's not really wood burning, but it's a very unique, you know. Especially
a heated up woodish and wooden glue smell, I would
probably, yeah.
And sweat. Don't forget sweat.
Oh, and sweat, yeah. And
Aquanet.
I was going to say drywall dust. You know, did all of us say that we remembered playing games at the skating rink? I thought that, I honestly thought our skating rink was kind of unique, but I guess they were all like that. This is kind of funny. I remember our skating rink had Crossbow. Do you guys remember that game where you had the actual gun and you would shoot things? And normally, they got it like when I was in seventh grade. And normally, I don't think I would have been tall enough to play it. But with roller skates on, I was tall enough to play it. But the hard thing was, is as I would play it, and I'd be shooting, I would get so excited, and then I could feel my feet rolling away from the machine. I'd be getting further and further. I have to pull myself back, you know. So it was this constant kind of thing. But yeah, I remember the older I got, and I don't know how old I was when I quit going to the skating rink, but I remember as a kid, I went there to roller skate, and then there was a time where I would roller skate and then play games. And the last few times I went there, I don't think that I got skates. I think it was just to go play the games and do all that stuff.
Yeah, it was another hangout.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad because the place that we would go to, it closed down a few years later, and we go there now. My wife will go and get a lot of her art supplies. It's a big, craft/art supply store. And I go in there and it's like, even though it's completely changed, there's aisles, I still know, okay, that's where, you know, the concession stand was.
Right.
That's where the arcade area was, you know, because I've had to use the bathrooms. And I'm like, I remember using these bathrooms when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. I remember where the DJ booth is, you know, it's my wife's not from around here. So she has like, she's just like, yeah, great. You told me that 10 times every time we come in here.
Yeah. So. And I'll say all of the rinks I remember going to as a kid, basically the games were treated horribly. Those were the places where the games would be the most faulty and the most broke.
Yeah,
I think most they didn't have somebody there on site to fix the games, you know, in a lot of those places. So, you know, maybe they had somebody come by once a week or something. And I'm sure they got the crap kicked out of them from kids on roller skates. that's how I stopped. You're like, here comes Galaga, boom! You know? So, and you know what's funny is back then, even though the games were new, they were beaten up because we played on them and stuff. And now, even though they're much older, a lot of, you know, the new arcades that are out there, I'm sure like Arcadia and a lot of them, the games have been restored. So they're actually, a lot of them are in a lot nicer condition now, 20, 30 years later than they were when they were back there when we were kids.
Yeah. And speaking of newer arcades, I mean, obviously, Vic, we know you have one by you. You work there. You're lucky enough to have that. I don't, again, we didn't have a ton of them here growing up. And I mean, I live outside of Buffalo, but we don't have any kind of retro-y arcade here. The only thing we have here now is a Dave and Buster's. And, you know, we went there a couple weeks ago, my wife and I and another couple. We had babysitters, and we went and had dinner. And, you know, we had a good time. There were, you know, we played some games, but off in the corner, I think they had three games, and I think two cabinets were like multi-game cabinets where they'd have like Miss Pac-Man, I think maybe Donkey Kong Jr., something like that, and it had Galaga, Missile Command, but that was, I mean, that's it. Yeah. If I want to play any games, it's on the, you know, the emulator on the TV. Dor, what about you? I mean, I've seen some pictures you've posted. What do you have around you now that you can go to these days and take your kids to play?
Right. Well, here's the thing. I was born in Baltimore, Maryland, cesspool of the East Coast. at the age of four, moved down to Glen Burnie. In Glen Burnie, we had a couple places. Now I live north of Baltimore instead of south. There is absolutely nothing worth even mentioning up here. And all the Dave and Buster's I've been to, don't get me wrong, there's always one or two games that are okay, but one or two games for someone like me does not fit the bill. That's just a tease. I don't even want to go there. I still have Crabtown, and it's just as filthy as I remember it. I would still never eat a piece of food they serve there, but they still have virtually all of the games they used to have. Some of them are now in better working condition than they were. But they even have like old Carnival. I mean, the old shooter game Carnival. I mean, they have not changed anything since then. And I would love it if they would turn into a pay once, play all day kind of thing. Because I would literally take my kids down there once every 3 weeks if they did that and just play crazy. Because they have games from Punch Out to Arm Wrestling to Double Dragon to Pole Position, Demolition Derby, Galaga, Joust, Mount Mania. I mean, immense amounts of games. And it still stinks. I'll say that too.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've seen your pictures posted on Google Plus. You know, you were sharing them to everybody, and it looks like a great time, man.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I found online, I did a search from my local area, and I had found a picture, and it was something like, I live outside of Buffalo in a town called Tonawanda, and then there's North Tonawanda, a couple of different ones. And it was like the arcade graveyard or something. And it was, someone had posted pictures of some building in North Tonawanda that had all these old arcade games, and people were trying to post on, like, in the comments, like, are these for sale? Where is this? And just like, it's just dead. It's a dead, you know, there's no activity on there. Nobody responding, you know, these are for sale. They went here or anything. So, I mean, I know you're saying about the Dave and Buster's. I won't go back there again, but you know, it was fun. My wife and I and our friends went, and I got to play some old games, and it was more or less just, you know, we got a babysitter. I don't care where we're, you know, we can go skip rocks. I don't care. Let's just get out of the house. Yeah, so,
yeah.
But, go ahead.
I would say Dave and Buster's, there's no doubt in my mind, if they have Donkey Kong, there's no way you could do a Twin Galaxies record on the machine, because they have the settings all changed and stuff tweaked because they want to take as much money from you as possible.
Right. Now, Vic, I mean, you work in an arcade, but is that the only one around you?
So there's a kind of barcade close to us. It's got six or seven games. And there's one further south of us. I think it was Z82 Retrocade. I believe that's right. And they're very much like us. You know, you pay, you know, however much money, and then you're in for the whole day.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's it. Of course, there's one, and I'll let Rob cover this one, because he's the one that introduced to me, and that's the 1984 arcade.
Yeah, Rob, why don't you talk about what you have now, places you have to go
right, well,
play games.
So here's the thing, is you know,
Mr. Cross Country.
Well, I talked about Cactus Jacks. That's the only, you know, that's the one that's in my backyard. And actually, Cactus Jacks is kind of they're turning themselves into a pinball place, and so they have about, I don't know, maybe half a dozen retro arcade games, but a big section of their arcade selection they've replaced. Now I think they have like 50 pinball tables, or last year they had none. So it's a big change in the games that Cactus Jacks has. But for the past few years, I've traveled a lot for work, and I've been watching these retro arcades pop up across the country. So when I have a trip, and a lot of times I'll drive. And so, like, if I'm going somewhere on the East Coast, and I'm taking I-40. Well, I found out about an arcade that was in Tennessee off of I-40. So I'll stop in and you know, spend a few bucks or whatever. So I've tried. I haven't made it to all of them, and I don't know that you could make it to all of them. But every time that I hear about, you know, one of these major retro arcades, I put it on my little list. And then if I'm going to be in that part of the country, I try to hit it. So the first one that I heard about was the 1984 arcade. That's the one that Vic mentioned. It is in Springfield, Missouri. It's about a five-hour drive north of me, and I've been up there, three or four times. It's the first retro arcade. It was the first one that I heard about that, you know, when this wave, this little resurgence that we're having now of retro arcades, that you paid $5 to get in, and you go in and you can play all their games. It's really nice owners. Everything there is really nice. I mean, all the machines look brand new. So it's a very cool place, and it's actually basically on our way to Chicago whenever we go on vacation up to Chicago. So that's a 1984 arcade. Number two on my list is obviously Arcadia Retrocade. It is about 3 to 3.5 hour drive for me, and so I haven't been as often as I'd like. But we've made it out there a few times, and Vic is never there on the weekends because he has to earn a living doing his other job. So I've actually been to the arcade several times, and I've never got to meet Vic in person yet. But well, Arcadia is another place where it's $5. And how many games do you guys have there now?
We've got 98 working machines on the floor.
It's ridiculous.
We have more machines than that, of course. But
right. It's more games. You know, I think of the arcades of my youth. None of them had 100 games. And not that you could play for $5, you know. And they have a snack bar in the back. And, I mean, it's literally a place where you could go hang out all day. You get tired of playing machines. There's chairs. You go sit down and go play Atari. Or, you know, they have cocktail machines or whatever. It's a really cool place. So let me run through a few of these real quick. There's the Fun Spot Arcade I've been to. That's the one that's up in New Hampshire. They call themselves, they have a retro area with 350 machines, 350 old arcade machines. So if you're in the northeast part, and I don't know how, to me, if you live in Oklahoma or Texas or whatever, then I've already told Sean, he might want to check his facts. I'm pretty sure New Jersey and New York are the same place. So I don't know.
Yeah, you're wrong.
And Baltimore. So I don't know how far you guys really are from New Hampshire. But if you ever end up going up that way, it's a really, really awesome place. Any old machine that you can think of, they probably have. Let's see what else. There's the Galloping Ghost that I went to this year. That's the one that's in Chicago, and they actually are the current holders. They have 400 retro machines. They have the same model. It's a little bit more expensive. I'm assuming rent is probably more expensive in Chicago. It's $15 to play, and they have machines that they had some machines I've never actually seen. They have an entire room of Japanese shooting style games. You know, if you like shoot 'em ups, they had Super Pitfall. They had, I mean, machines, the sequel to Elevator Action, stuff I've never seen on a location. So, Galloping Ghost, really cool. Let's see what else. Lost Art Video Games. I went to that last year. That's in Greensboro, North Carolina. A kind of a small arcade. They had like maybe 10 machines, 10 pinball machines, and they have a slightly different model than some of the other ones. What they have is they also buy, sell, and trade used console games. So you could go there and, you know, maybe sell some Nintendo games, buy whatever. You know, they had some Atari games for sale. And then play some arcade games and stuff while you're there too. Insert Coins is one of the new, I think Vic referred to as a barcade. Insert Coins is right off of Fremont Street in Las Vegas. We went there a couple of years ago. Pretty nice place, not for me. It's Vegas and it's pretty close to, I mean, it's a tourist area. So they have arcade games there. They probably had 25 machines, I would say. And, it was kind of high pressure as far as, there was a cover charge, and then plus they wanted you to be buying drinks, and the drinks were like $12 or something. I mean, it's Vegas, so it is what it is. I mean, the place was cool, but, it was pretty expensive, you know, for what it was. If you're in Las Vegas, I would highly recommend well, I don't want to say highly recommend skipping that place, but if I had one place to go, I would go to the Pinball Hall of Fame. It's all based off of quarters, and they have, I forgot how many, like 70, 80 pinball machines, plus they have 30 or 40 retro arcade games there too. So that's definitely the place to go. And they have certain nights, like Friday, Saturday nights on the weekends, where you can play, and they have all the machines on free play. So Pinball Hall of Fame, definitely a cool place. And then there's the one up and two up in Denver, which I have not been to yet, but I'll probably be doing, I'll talk about probably on the next You Don't Know Flack. I'll do a whole thing about the Kong off three, and I'll give a review of the one up and the two up as well on there. But yeah, I'm trying to hit as many of these as I can, you know, one thing that I never thought about as a kid, I mean, we were kids, we didn't think about this, but you know, like I would want to go play Mat Mania because you put a quarter in and I would play as long as I could, you know. But now what I want to do is give these places money because I want them to stay right. open, you know. I get on to Shea over at Arcadia because when I go out there, he's like, no, come in. I'm like, no, we want to pay. And he's like, no, you drove all the way out here. I'm like, I know. We drove all the way out here so me and my kids could play games. Here's some money. And he's like, well, you could pay next time. I'm like, no, you know. But so, you know, we'll stop by Cactus Jack's every now and then, and I'll give my kids $5. And I'm like, go play whatever. I mean, even if it's a crane machine, which I just detest the whole ticket yeah. redemption thing. I know it's a necessary evil in this business. But I want to keep putting money back into those things because I want them to succeed. I want them to stay open.
Oh, yeah.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not David Buster's.
Yeah.
I won't go back to it either.
Yeah. I mean, I really, I envy you guys that like you said, to take your kids there. You know, when I'm sitting in the living room and I throw on the Wii emulator and I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I hit Donkey Kong on. Well, all right, Dad, it just looks like because we had purchased, I think, Donkey Kong or something for the Wii through the actual Wii store. And I don't know, I just want them to be able to stand in the machine, mm-hmm. feel the buttons, feel the joystick and play instead of being on the couch, you know, and get away from these, you know, and it's, you know, our own fault. It's the times, you know, get away from the iPods and the tablets and this, you know, like let's go as a group and play some games. And I have to do some searching. I think there actually might be something out in Rochester, New York, which is about an hour and a half away, hour 20 yeah. minutes. And
there's a video game. It's a video game museum or something in Rochester. I just read about that.
Well, okay. I'll have to look it up because we're actually going there Saturday. There is it's called the Strong Museum. It's a kids museum. It's all hands on. It's great. I mean, I know you were up here last year in this area, and I would tell you if you came back to definitely go to the Strong Museum. The reason we're going is because every year they have the 501st, which is the Star Wars costuming group. It's worldwide, and I wouldn't say even local. I think it's more from the central New York area. The Garrison is going to be there and you can have photos and it's such a good time. I mean, the costumes for the 501st, they have to be movie canon approved, you know? But we're going to be out there. I got to look it up. Maybe we can find this arcade and I know there was some, cause there's a website. What do you know, Rob, what is the website that will tell you the arcades in each state?
Oh, you know? Shoot. Yeah. Hold on. I got a bookmark. I'll pull it up here real quick.
Well, because there is a site that you can go to.
Is it Arcade? Like A-U-R-cade?
Yes.
It's spelled weird. Yeah.
All right. I'll put that in the notes too, because it's nice if you're traveling. You know, Rob already gave us a number of different states with some arcades in case you're traveling, but you know, you check this site and if you're going to be out of town, you can find it. And there was only one place. And like I said, it was in Rochester and I kind of got to look it up again, but I like I said, I wish I could take my kids to experience the smell. You know, there probably won't be as much Aquanet in the air or cigarette smoke, you know, but I think that's an okay thing. So, but, you know, this was Rob and I talked about this. It was going to be a hard episode to do because we could just sit here and go on about games all night. But unfortunately, you know, you can't do that.
Well, to take it just a touch further, like we talked about controllers. We had games with dual sticks like Karate Champ. We had 720 that had the circle controller. What would you guys say was the unique, different, interesting video game controller that you can't basically get on an emulator at home where you have to have that real video game feel?
Well, I'd say it would be one of your favorite games, Star Wars.
Yeah.
The flight controller.
Perfect controller.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I have to go with 720. You know, like you said, it's a spinner that's built like a joystick. If you look underneath that, there's actually a set of gears and a optical disc and then a bicycle chain.
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous. And there is no way, you know, if you're playing on a home game, you know, it doesn't, you can't do it with a spinner because it doesn't feel right, but you can't do it with a joystick. I even bought the Midway Atari collections for PlayStation 2, I think, or maybe PlayStation 3. I think it was PlayStation 2. And, some of those games are just unplayable. I would say, do I get two? I'm doing two.
Sure.
Sean's going to kill us. number two is Spy Hunter for me. I mean, Spy Hunter, you have the steering wheel, you have the yoke, you have the buttons on the steering wheel and the gear shift or whatever, and it just doesn't translate to home systems.
Right. Well, the one I'll throw out there real quick, it's a newer game called Arm Wrestling, where it was dual screen above the other. Bald Bull was in it as Mask X. He had a mask over his face. But the gimmick was, it was simply one joystick that only went left and right and one button. But when you beat Mask X, it kept saying, pull up, pull up. And the first time you play the game, you have no idea what they're talking about. The stick, you literally had to put like between your fingers and pull literally up, like away from the machine to get it to work. And that was like, I played that game and I remember thinking, that's ingenious. And I would watch other people play the game and have no clue on what the game was telling you to do. But then like the dual screen came into play. The guy would throw money. You had to reach your hands up by pulling up again and catch the money. So I liked when they would do something a little bit different with the controllers, which I'm sure just made them more expensive to fix. But I, you know, in hindsight, I thought it was cool.
Very good. Like I said, we could definitely just keep going. You know, it's, but that's, you know, you got to keep the podcast down to a certain time.
Pish posh.
So, but we could, I mean, hey, this is something we could always revisit again down the road.
Yeah.
You know, bring more games. I'll tell Vic, hey, we're going to come on. You can bring four games this time. And we'll just torture him every couple months. But definitely if you're in the Fayetteville, Arkansas area, you got to go stop by and say hi to Vic at the Arcadia Retrocade. But Vic, you got something coming up anyways. Because you got a new mic and everything, a whole new sound. What do you got cooking?
So actually, I'm going to start a Arcadia Retrocade podcast. So So I'm playing around with the what I want it to be, of course, because you know, obviously being part of the Retroist, you know, I don't want it to be exactly like you know, his podcast, mm-hmm. Of course, this new mic, which is fantastic. And it's, you know, of course, the first time I got the mic, I started singing into it to see how horrible I sounded. So, but I'm hoping that maybe within the month, the first one will actually be out, and I will post those on the Retroist site.
So what are you going to talk about on like games at the arcade or behind the scenes stuff from working there or what?
Every week, do something like a high score rundown on what's going on at the Arcadia Retrocade, and do a little behind the scenes, and probably pick a game a week, and just kind of give a little bit of history on it. You know, like Shooting Master is one of our rarest games.
Mm.
Well, it sounds good. I look forward to it.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you. So it's because of all of you that I've decided to throw my hat into the ring. So.
Well, you know, Rob and I were talking, I think it was after the last time you were on, and we thought, man, Vic really needs to kind of do a podcast of his own or do something, you know. Exactly. I mean, you do contribute every week, and we love your segments on the Retroist, but I don't know, we just thought, man, it's when you mentioned it to me in email the other day, I was like, it's about time it does something.
I think I said he should do a podcast in his D&D character voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did last time.
What was his what's your character's name again?
Tarnak One Thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe you can have him talk if you have like a gauntlet or episode or whatever. You can have, yeah, have him be a guest to come on.
Well, it helps. It helps, guys. Honestly, it really does with all, you know, all your help. And of course, obviously, the Retroist is one of the biggest, you know, pushers, if you will, to get people to do their own thing. So I thank you all very, very much for that.
Oh man, I said before, the Retroist, your segments, Doug, Rob. I mean, it's what got me started with this podcast. You know, I always thought I was like not the only person, but of people I know, either work with or friends or whatever, no one would ever really talk about the stuff like that you see on the Retroist or movies, you know, that we might talk here on the Retroist and stuff like, you know, nobody really had a sense of nostalgia for him. Like, yeah, I watched it. It was good. Or yeah, you know, he's played with my Star Wars figures or that kind of stuff. And when I found the Retroist, I was just like, are you kidding me? Where, you know, and then the nice thing is I had a couple years to go back and listen to, you know, so I just was like, subscribe, download them all. So, you know, it's because of him. And then, you know, I got to meet all you guys and like I said, get this podcast started. So I thank you and Rob and Retroist and everybody that contributes over there. But Vic, I'm really glad you came back on. I really appreciate it. It was a good time. The door is always open if you want to come back on. And let us know when you are going to release that new podcast. So we can definitely try and spread the word. Any other plugs or anything you want to talk about or mention before?
Obviously, not really. Just to be honest, just the same old, right, same old.
Well, we look forward to your new podcast coming out. And Mr. Rob Flack O'Hara, why don't you talk about a little something you wrote a few years ago that people could go to throwbackreviews.com/Amazon and get.
Oh, well, I wrote a couple of books. I wrote Commodork, Sordid Tales from a BBS Junkie, and Invading Spaces, which is a book that's all about collecting arcade games. And you can find those on Amazon. And if you go to, is the link throwbackreviews.com/Amazon?
Yeah, or if you
or there's you just need a to link on the main page.
Yeah, the network and our Throwback Reviews, there's on the sidebar there. You just click that and then bookmark it. And
right. So you get a few bucks, right, from a purchase?
Yeah, it doesn't cost anybody any extra money. It's nothing shady. It's just basically saying that you went to Amazon through us, and so then Amazon thanks us and gives us a little percentage of the sale.
So if you want to, and I have no vested interest in this, but if you'll go out to through that link and buy 852 copies of my book, that will pay for Throwback Reviews for the next year. So. And I will be eating. I will do a whole podcast about all the caviar I bought. I'd probably go buy an arcade game is what I'd do.
I mean, there is Cyber Mondays coming up soon.
Oh, that's right. Great Christmas gifts.
A lot of people like to use Amazon. It would be perfect if you just clicked our link and use that. I mean, I would greatly appreciate it. I mean, it's really just to help out with, you know, we have the network going and just really to help out costs with that. But like I said, it doesn't cost anybody anything extra. And what about you there, Mr. Steve McLaughlin? What do you got going on?
Sorry, I'm watching a YouTube video of arm wrestling video game. If you want to follow me, just go over to podnuts.com. We have a whole bunch of podcasts going on. We just launched a couple more. We have Call That Girl remote show all about remote supporting of computers. We have Podnuts Meetup, which is a free for all. Anyone can come on the show and talk about anything related to the network or podcasting whatsoever. And we just launched Health Nuts.
Yes.
Which something tells me you might want to listen to a little bit, John.
I did.
Yeah, because
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
You're just about the healthiest person I know. I'm not on that show because all I would do is bring it down.
Yeah, that was a good show. I saw it posted this past weekend, I believe it was.
Yes, sir.
So well, I look forward to that thing. Really
what going. Was that show again? I was eating Doritos. I couldn't hear exactly what the link was to that.
Oh, man. Very good. And, yeah, for me, just go to throwbackreviews.com. But or you can go to Throwback Network, our network that we started a few weeks back. We got some really good podcasts. We just got some new guys that came over and joined the network, the No Quarter Podcast. After this episode, great show to listen to. They Rob, why don't you talk about exactly how their format goes?
They have two hosts. It's Carrington Manson and Mike McGinnis. And what they do each week is they play an arcade game and they give pretty much the whole history of that machine. And then they compare who got the high score. They have, reader feedback and stuff like that. And then at the end of each show, they play a small sound bit, and that will be the game that they're going to play next week. So you kind of have to try and figure out what game next week's game is going to be.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a fun show, and they have lots of user interaction. They have a Facebook page, and they're on Twitter, so you can follow them there. And you can find all that stuff. Just go to throwbacknetwork.net, and you'll see them listed on the side, No Quarter.
And the good news is the banhammer has been removed.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they have a ongoing thing. They're banning regular people from listening to their show, but I preemptively banned one of the hosts from their own show. So I think they've removed the ban hammer from everybody for a while. So
yeah, that's a good show. You turned me on to that a while ago. And like I said, I don't play a lot of arcade games, but I like listening to it. It's fun, and you even give quite a bit of feedback to the show. And like you were talking about earlier with, I think it was the Matt Mania, giving him a hard time about that. So definitely go over to throwbacknetwork.net. We got a lot of stuff covered there. We got the arcade games. We got the Atari 2600 cover. We got the Intellivision cover with the Intellivisionaries, 80s anthologies, creepy movies. Crazy, creepy, cool movies.
Yeah.
From Doug McCoy, the McCoy cast. So, definitely go check that out. And you know what? I think that's going to wrap up our arcade episode. So I just want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the podcast. And until next time, thanks for listening.